potential is that they are able to have a seat at the table. And so I want you to know, the Chicago State family, that each and every one of us, no matter where we come from, no matter what the past is, can do great things and become great. And that's your destiny. And if anyone tells you different, then, you know, just ignore it. Continue to move forward. I will say one thing about, you know, the current administration. I do believe in my heart that the change that they set out to do is the change that they're committed to. And I think this president has allowed each and every one of us to really dream, because no one ever thought or believed that he would actually accomplish this goal.
Sorry to cut that off with a compliment to the president.
You know what? It may be improbable, but it's not impossible. And so I want you to be encouraged. Again, greetings from Washington, D.C., from the White House. And may God speak. Have a good day.
Well, we appreciate that presentation and the sort of the creativity that went into the development of the video and the success our students met while in Washington, D.C. For those of you that have graduated or are about to graduate, we hope that you become loyal alumni and immediately affiliate with the Alumni Association and continue to contribute to the success of our university. Thank you. Now we will move into the meeting of the Finance and Audit Committee. Can we have the roll call, please?
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Can we verify that the meeting notice was properly sent?
Yes, the meeting notice requirement has been met.
Could I have a motion with regard to the meetings of our previous meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Our first presentation for the morning is Mr. Meeks.
Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Meeks.
Good morning, trustees.
Good morning. Mr. Meeks.
The very first thing that I'd like to discuss or to find out, I understand that we are under a time constraint, and so I'll ask that the financial presentation on the balance sheet, as well as the variance analysis of the balance sheet, as well as the financial statement, the income statement, if there's any questions concerning the variance analysis that's done there in your packet, I can ask our controller, Mr. Landon, to come up. But if everything is pretty self-explanatory.
Are there any concerns with regard to our financial position? That's
no.
What we'd like to hear.
No, our financial position in terms of what's being reflected for the quarter that ended in March is pretty much what we had expected. You see from the variance analysis, there's just a couple of items there. One is the income statement. There's a variance of about $8 million having to do with the federal awards, I believe, on grants. And mainly that has to do with the reduction in the Pell Grant and also in the Ghana textbook. That was about $5 million. Mm-hmm. The Pell was down about $2 million, I believe, if you look at the variance analysis. And so we would expect that because the textbook and learning for the Ghana had ended, and that I understand that they're talking about trying to, you know, resurrect it again, but then, you know, the enrollment numbers were down for that period for the Pell, so we would expect a drop in the Pell. So that was, so there's nothing there that really surprised us for that quarter.
Okay. But going forward, overall, beyond the quarter, how are we doing?
Overall, we're doing okay with the financials. I'd like to sort of segue into that because, of course, that has an effect on the bottom line. And the bottom line for us, with the financial statements in terms of our revenue and expenses has to do with how much cash we're left with at the end of the year. And as always, I'd like to sort of segue into that, and I'll be brief here. And if I'll just, if I can just go to the screen for a second. As you can see, I want to say that the state has continued to reimburse us on a timely basis. And so the reimbursements that we've been receiving from the state are as we had anticipated in our spreadsheet and during our analysis. And as you can see here, we have, as of mid-May, we're still looking at about $21 million in cash that we have. Projecting out to the end of the year, let's look at the end of the year, 6/30, we're still looking at about $20 million. If the state stopped reimbursing us, then we're looking at something like $14 million. You may ask then, what does the state currently owe us? And if we'll just go to that number, currently the state still owes us about $12.4 million. Now, we've received from the state in the last 2 months, which is, again, good for us, we've received reimbursements of about $10 million in the last 2 months from the state. If the state continues to reimburse us the way they are, let's go to the long term. Because I'm trying to, if you have any questions, just let me know. If they continue to reimburse us, you know, going out, you know, we're looking at January, we're looking at, this is just high level here. You're looking at, let's go to the month where we usually are most critical, which is December. Okay? In December, if we continue to be reimbursed from the state, then we're looking at about $19 million. Okay? Without the state reimbursements, then of course we're looking at a slight deficit. But we don't anticipate that we'll hit that mark. But again, if they continue to reimburse us the way we are, if we're diligent and we continue to watch our cash, at the end of December, you know, we're still looking at about $19 million, which for us, for the state for the month of December, which was always our critical month, where we're always scrapping for cash and trying to get it, that's pretty good. It's a good position for us to be in, especially as we begin to look at some of the things that are being talked about in the state in terms of budget reductions and also funding things that we since had not funded, like the pensions. So we're looking pretty good in terms of cash position for the state. One of the things that I was asked to do was to present basically a budget on what we thought some of the shortfalls might be or some of the challenges. At the time, I believe back in March when we had the meeting, it wasn't really certain, you know, what we were really facing in terms of a budget reduction. We had heard about a budget reduction, but we didn't know what it was. We were anticipating anywhere from 5 to 10%. They were talking about that we had to come and fund either a portion or all of our pension that the state had been funding, and we were looking at, on the worst end, we were looking at something like $7 million that we'd have to come up with. That is still hasn't been decided, but what has been decided as a exercise, we were contacted by the Appropriations Committee for the House of Representatives, and they, we were asked to present to them, hypothetically, a 6.14% reduction in our state appropriation and what that would look like and where would we cut the line. And what I have up here is basically that and what it would have an effect on us. And currently we're being funded, our appropriation is being funded out of the Educational Assistance Fund. And let me know if I'm taking up too much time.
You're good.
Okay? And if you go to the bottom line, you know, there's a 6.14% reduction for us would be a little less than $2.5 million. And so if you can see here, if you go all the way down again, you see that each and every one of our line items, going to start with personnel. Oh, yeah. Okay, starting with personnel, contractual services, those are our main lines that we present to the, you know, that we present to, you know, to the state in terms of being funded. And again, we're only talking about the Educational Assistance Fund. That's all they asked us about. And so they're saying a 2.14% for us, I mean, a 6.14 would be about a $2.5 million deficit. You'll see personnel services is getting hit with about $2 million. And then there's a slight reduction in some of the other lines. What we put forward to them was that that all the other lines will be affected, but we're still looking at about $2 million that are coming out of personal services. As a result of that, also looking at things to come. We put in place a hiring freeze on all permanent positions. And so we're analyzing each and every one. And so we're trying to be proactive in addressing whatever shortfalls that we'll be facing in FY 2013. So we're moving cautiously. Even though our cash position is healthy at the moment, and that can sustain us, but again, we have to look at the permanent positions or the permanent funding on a going forward basis. And so we're being very cautious, and we're being very proactive in addressing any possible shortfalls to the budget and any possible adverse impact that it's going to have on our operations.
And in terms of a freeze, were we looking at any, did anyone come forward with a critical need? I mean, were there any critical needs that we?
Yes, there were. Yeah. We actually formed a committee, and we analyzed in each and every one of the positions. There were approximately 76 positions, permanent positions that were pending hires. That we looked at and that we analyzed and for critical need, and we looked at the justifications that we asked to be submitted to support those critical needs, and some of those did go forward.
Especially areas where we, I would ask that you, in terms of, you know, assessing critical need, make sure you talk to our internal auditor to make sure that in those areas where we have high levels of risk and there may be a need for additional services, that we don't, you know, cut off those areas, especially areas that have been the subject of audit concerns where we were, you know, engaged in plans to correct findings. So I just want to make sure that we consider where we're at risk.
We did. There was representation. The representation that we had on the committee, it was sort of cross-functional, and so it was in all of the major areas. And so those areas that we knew that, you know, where some of the risk areas were, I sat on the committee as well as the chief of staff, the provost, the university budget committee chair was also sat on that committee. So then we were all aware of some of the, we did take those things into consideration as we move forward with those positions and why we continued the freeze with the others.
Okay. And I just want to make sure that Mr. Cloud was, you know,
he wasn't sitting at the table.
But I'm just saying, but his concerns and his risk analysis was part of a consideration in our hiring and decisions, and our freeze decisions. And so if you haven't had that dialogue.
No, I'll be honest with you, Trustee. Yeah. We haven't had that dialogue with the internal auditors.
Right, because
you know, concerning that.
Because I just received a risk analysis and risk profile, and I. And if we have areas of the university where the risk analysis puts it at a high level, and there are hiring needs in that particular area, we should use that as a factor in our assessment.
And we will certainly, I mean, this is an ongoing committee. We're not done with the analysis, and we'll certainly take that in consideration going forward.
Okay.
And we will get that information from the internal auditor, and we will, when we sit at the table, and we will look at that as we continue our review.
Just as we are going to get counsel from our internal auditor, which I think is excellent, we've also sought counsel from our provost. Because there are certain academic programs where we are required to have
certain staffing.
So it's, you know, we need to look at both sides of those, you know, and as Mr. Meeks has stated, this is an ongoing process. It's a work in process. So the good thing is we can now include the internal auditor's observations, just as we have included the academic ones already.
Thank you, Mr. Meeks.
Okay. I do.
For that section, you're now moving into the action item.
Yes. The first action item that I have has to do with an appointment of an ex officio treasurer. And for the sake of everyone else that's sitting within the sound of my voice, I like to indicate that there is a state mandate that's out there that says in part that that the board shall designate a member of the staff of the Chicago State University as treasurer to serve the board, but not as a member. and shall furnish a bond in such amount and with such surety as is satisfactory to the board. Now, we have such a person currently, so we're within the statute. However, when we went back and looked, we noted that that it hadn't received the approval of the board, and so we want to go forward with that. This person had served in this capacity, and so and it is Louise Williams, who's the Associate Director of Accounting. Now, prior to my coming on board, she also served as the interim vice president for finance and administration. And at that time, she had the bond, you know, she had the bond then, but we wanted to make sure that the current board approves that so that we can tie everything up so that, again, we're not exposed to any potential audit findings. And that's one of the reasons why we're presenting this as a perfunctory task moving forward. She does have a bond in the amount of $10 million, which is standard for anyone in that current position, and that is something that had preceded back from some years.
Is Ms. Williams here?
I was told that she was on vacation. I thought she would be here at this meeting, but I was told that she was on vacation this week, so I do apologize if I provided any misinformation in terms of her appearance here today.
How long has she been with the university?
I think it's been in excess of 10 years. About 14 years?
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do I have a motion with regard to that resolution?
So moved. Second.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
We ready to
get
the next one? Okay. The second resolution that I'm presenting forward is the FY13 tuition and fee waiver budget. And, FY13 tuition and fee waiver budget. The tuition and fee waiver budget is something that we do annually that we have as part of our FY13 board that we move. FY13 budget when we move it forward in June that we'll be presenting to you. It's just that we present this to you because it's ready to be presented now. We want to present it to you here. Last year, I'll remind you that the budget last year was $1.7 million, and we're asking for $1.8 million this year. The reason for the increase is because we did have a 3% increase in our tuition from last year to this year, and it's reflected in the request that we're making now. And again, the tuition and fee waiver budget that's going before you was vetted out in a committee as well that's composed of several staff members. And there were some individuals that we sort of shifted some of the waivers around between categories to come up with a budget that you see before you now. And we're asking for $1.8 million as opposed to the $1.7 that we had last year.
Are there any questions of Mr. Meeks on this resolution?
No questions.
Is there a motion?
So moved. Second.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
The last resolution that I'll be presenting is that we're asking for an expansion of the in-state tuition. And without, I just want to point out in this particular resolution, and for the sake of those that are in the audience, I just want to refresh that back in May 2010, about 2 years ago, the board approved Section 3 of the board regs to expand the in-state tuition to contiguous states around Illinois. The tuition and fee committee that I mentioned earlier, when we met, we're putting forth this resolution to expand that. We want to adopt the designation, we want to expand that to include states in the entire Midwest as defined by the U.S. Census Bureau. And we want this effective for the fall 2012 term. The Census Bureau defines the Midwest as Indiana, Ohio, of course, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota. I just wanted to add, as you reflect on this resolution, that we're being consistent with some of the practices from some of our other schools within the state who have adopted similar policies of expanding their in-state tuition to other states. Eastern Illinois University has such a policy. Northern Illinois University does, well, not Northern Illinois, but Southern Illinois, Western Illinois, they all have policies on expanding their in-state tuition to out-of-state residents.
You also said that. Did you tell me that Governor State also has?
Governor State also.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I understand the benefit of extending the in-state tuition to the contiguous states, but what's the benefit to the university to expand that all the way to Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota?
I'm glad you asked that question. I have here to assist me in answering that question. Members of the committee that I just spoke of. And so I would ask our interim director of athletics and an associate counsel. I'll let her introduce herself.
Good morning, trustees.
Matt, you're on deck.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. One of the reasons that this came about is because we were looking at ways to expand our recruiting efforts. I will speak to the recruiting efforts of student athletes, and Matt Harrison, Director of Admissions, can speak more broadly to the university's strategy. But what we've noticed over the past couple of years with the expansion to contiguous states is that we're now able to go out and have leverage to recruit higher achieving students, more competitive students from an athletic perspective, to come to the university. About more than half of our student athletes come from out of state. And once it was expanded to the contiguous states, that 27% are coming from that area. We also recruit heavily in Michigan, which is the next largest population that we have. It's just 10%. And Minnesota, Ohio, and Michigan are all within a 160-mile radius of our university. So they're hotbeds that we can go to try and to get more competitive students, both academically and athletically. The reason why we looked to expand it beyond those three states is we believe that we can, again, use that leverage to go in and recruit these students. Currently, if we recruit an out-of-state student athlete, it costs us for a full scholarship about $26,500. It's more than $10,000 less for us. This is money that we're paying, that we're, you know, granting to the students. It's not money they pay to the university. It's revenue that we generate internally. And so it would give us the opportunity to recruit more of them, because in headcount sports like men's and women's basketball, volleyball, and tennis, those are typically sports where we award full scholarships. And they're clearly, basketball is a high-profile sport and one in which we would like to be able to expand our recruiting base. So from an athletic perspective, that is the reasoning behind wanting to expand it. The other part of that is that we want to make sure we're in full compliance with all university policies, avoid any areas of risk for audit findings, and this was a way to go about doing that that was fully in line with the Board of Trustee regulations, right, and university policy.
And isn't North Dakota one of those in our?
Yes. The other part of that is that we compete in the Great West Conference, and these are states in which we compete for students in that conference. North Dakota is currently in the conference. South Dakota previously was. So we actually, our base goes all the way out to Utah and all the way east to New Jersey. But right. That's yet another reason that would give us a competitive advantage.
And I'm assuming you take into account the additional revenue from room and board, because most of those students, I'd imagine, would.
Mm-hmm. For those sports where we do not grant full scholarships, we actually would be generating some revenue. You are correct.
That is correct. Okay. Now, and that's from the athletic perspective. If you want to, from the recruiting and academic perspective, we can have Matt, if you would like to comment additionally. Yes?
Yes.
I don't.
No? You wanna hear?
Yes.
Okay.
I think we ought to have a full record on this and for our, for board's purposes. Good morning.
Good morning, trustee Nellers.
Excuse me.
I'll be brief. I know that we have time constraints this morning. I was asked to compile some data in regard to the impact of such a change. So we went back 5 years and looked at the change to contiguous state and state tuition, as well as the revenue generation and student headcount from the other states in the Midwest. Excluding athletes on scholarship over 5 years, that number was right around 18 students. So our impact outside of this region geographically has not been a large one. Therefore, foregone revenue from this type of change would be nominal. Couple that with additional revenue from students who would be coming from out of state and therefore being residents on campus. From a financial perspective, it makes a tremendous amount of sense. I think the secondary question that I was then asked was, we have contiguous state in-state tuition, and yet we still haven't drawn a large number of those students to the institution. What will be the recruiting capacity for contacting both the contiguous states and then the expansion towards the Midwest states? And I'll speak a little bit to that. What my office in the past hadn't done was had the travel capacity or the budget to be able to travel to states outside of Illinois to recruit prospective students. And these days, we don't need to necessarily do that. We will be expanding that to major metropolitan areas, St. Louis, Milwaukee, Indianapolis, those types of large metro areas. However, with the creation of microsites out on the web, the opportunity for us to expand our reach beyond the area through student search and through coupling what we offer as an institution with what students are looking for on their own, in addition to direct mail campaigns and marketing campaigns that we have. This past fall, we sent roughly 12,000 postcards to students outside the state indicating that we had in-state tuition. These are some of the types of recruitment initiatives that we'll use to couple the expansion of this definition to impact the enrollment of out-of-state students.
Have you any history on how this has worked for Eastern or Southern Governor State in terms of when they expanded to the Midwest? Just curious if their numbers had increased.
We do see that.
18 is a pretty small number, so you know the revenue loss there to me is not that big of a deal. If you can, you know, recruit three times as many students, you're almost equivalent to what you were where you would have been anyway. So it's a small number, but I'm curious if you've seen what's happened at those universities since they've expanded.
We have. We see schools do this for two primary reasons. The first of which is branding and reputation, and to increase the geographic role of that institution. We see SIU offering this extension to states like Tennessee and to Arkansas. The opportunity for us to build an institutional reputation outside of the Chicagoland region, one, is beneficial overall. Secondly, is a headcount perspective, and that's one of the things that we're working to address at this institution. Anywhere that we can expand our marketing and recruitment initiatives to increase the student body are actions that we're looking to take. Anecdotally, we do know that schools like NIU, SIU, have increased from roughly 2.5% out-of-state tuition or out-of-state student population up to in the 7 to 8% range.
Wow. That's good.
I don't know that that's necessarily attributable to this action, but it would be part of their plan.
Right. That's great. I'm clear.
Okay. That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that presentation.
Thanks.
Are there any additional questions regarding the resolution?
No questions.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
And I believe for me that is all the resolutions that I have to present today. If there's no other questions from me?
No.
No, thank you, Mr. Meeks.
Thank you very much, trustees.
Someone else's name. That's my resolution.
That's yours, yeah.
We're going to take a brief break in the current agenda to hear from Attorney Boykin.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, sorry, members of
let
the board.
Let that slack, you got on a three-piece.
I thank the distinguished gentleman, and I want to thank you for taking me out of order here, Mr. President, staff. It truly is a privilege and an honor to be here to make this report to the board. Since we last spoke, we've had a number of things to take place. One, a lot of the work has centered around the mitigation of the audit finding report in terms of making sure that we get the word out and meet with the stakeholders and get our message out. And I'm proud to say that many of those stakeholders, including Representative Bobby Rush, Congressman Benny Davis, and Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr., and of course Senator Durbin, whom the chairman of the board met with his chief of staff. And we also met with Senator Kirk's folks as well. All of them were very pleased with the route that we had taken in terms of reducing, one, the number of audit findings, and two, believe that we're on the right path and right trajectory in terms of moving the university forward. I would also add that my office set up a meeting for the chairman with Representative Chapin Rose, whom he had a great meeting with, and we're making inroads there. Some of the other work centered around our advocacy, of course, for keeping those student loan interest rates from doubling. We got to get action in Congress on that before July 1st, or else the rates double on the students. And, of course, many of our students would be drastically impacted with additional debt. Also, of course, we're following the work along with respect to Pell Grants and making sure that we get level funding in the budget. The Labor, HHS, and Education Appropriations Committee, they don't expect movement on that possibly until September or final passage probably in November in a lame duck session of Congress. Also, since we last spoke, we understand that you know, the university received a couple of federal grants. Congressman Danny Davis, Congressman Rush, and Congressman Jackson were extremely helpful in that regard. I had the privilege and honor just a couple of days ago to take a student trustee, David Anderson, around to meet with the members of the delegation and their staffs. He had been advised by folks at the White House, of course he's doing a White House internship, he'd been advised that maybe he doesn't want to go to Capitol Hill and meet those folks, but he decided that, you know, after I talked to him, hey, maybe I should go meet them and expand my network of influence. And he's glad that he met those folks because they embraced him and of course, offered to be helpful to him going forward. And we also arranged meetings for the Latino delegation that came to town that the president requested with members of Congress and their staffs. And so we're excited about where we're going and where we're headed. We will continue to send grant opportunities to the university. We're also working with C. Cole Dillon on a gigabyte grant that she's going to be submitting. We've partnered her with a private partner, Best Buy, to sort of team up. The folks at DCEO are excited about that, and we're going to get some letters of recommendation for that from the federal level for her on that grant opportunity. We'll continue to work with the president and the team to try to find opportunities too for, you know, staff and professors here at the university to testify in Washington. And one of the things that I hope to accomplish is I know graduation is coming up next week, and so we're going to hopefully get members of Congress to put in the congressional record some of the great things that are going on at Chicago State University. So I'll personally make sure that that happens. With that said, that pretty much concludes my report. I'm open for any questions.
Any, just bring us through the conversations you had about Metro.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So we thank you, sir. We actually had an ongoing conversation with Congressman Rush, Congressman Davis, and Jackson. All three of them have been meeting with Larry Huggins, and there's going to be some movement there. Right now, they're beating them up over this contracting issue, In fact, Representative Rush is meeting with them. They have a Metro Board meeting today. And so he's at that Metro Board meeting, and he's going to be beating them up on their lack of contracting with minorities on some of these big projects. But there is some movement on that, and if we can get a transportation bill out of the Congress, obviously they're in conference now. They're moving. We're trying to figure out if we're going to have a longer-term bill or if we're going to have a short-term bill. But either way, we're going to get some movement on that and get some help for that metro station.
So their position has been that they can't do much, and it's really a federal issue.
Right.
Is that what you've come to find to be the case?
Well, I mean, look, that's why you got the members of Congress who are actually putting pressure on these guys. I mean, they're getting their funding from Washington, a lot of it. And the approach that Congressman Rush and Congressman Davis and Jackson are taking is, look, take a piece of that money and put it towards development and renovation at the Metro Stop at Chicago State.
Yeah, and has the alderman been involved in those conversations?
Yes, that is correct.
Who's the alderman?
Sawyer, right?
Yeah,
Sawyer.
That's right. He was at that meeting.
Bill's on the south, Sawyer's on the north.
Right.
Right.
And then Harrison's on the east.
It's almost like we need to build ourselves.
Any thoughts about when that might happen? We got so many interested parties here.
Right.
I can't get my arms around who's going to make the final call on this.
Right.
Seems like everybody wants to get it done. You know, so I'm always, you know, curious why it hasn't been done. So,
Mr. Chairman, it's my hope that I can give you a more definitive report later on today. I'm going to actually be Congressman Rush, Davis, and Jackson are actually going to be at my office for this big event that we're doing at noon today, which was, you know, President Watson was helpful. We're honoring 13 extraordinary women. Z. Scott, we wanted to honor you, but we knew you had board obligations today.
Perfect.
So that'll come later on down the line. But people like Mary D. and Michelle Harris and, you know, some of the other luminaries we're going to be honoring today at noon at a Mother's Day luncheon. So to all the mothers, too, wish you a very happy Mother's Day.
Yeah. Will you, my only ask, the only other ask is it to make sure that they keep pressure on the Metro.
Absolutely.
I just feel like they're looking for an out here, and I just don't, you know, I don't want them to get off easy on this one, not when we get, you know, students around that gunpoint there.
Can we get on their agenda, their board agenda? Because they do have a board.
Yeah.
And if you could arrange for Dr. Watson and our chair to get on that agenda, might be another way for us to get in.
We'll make it happen.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't want an out. I saw it when we met.
Yeah. We've been trying to get this done for years.
Yeah. So.
And now it's become it's a risk for our students.
Absolutely. I understand.
Thank you for that report.
Yeah, appreciate it. We've had excellent meetings, President and myself. I never talked to so many legislators in my life. The interesting thing was most of them just didn't know. You know, it's amazing what, you know, a conversation can do. And we gave it to them straight. The President and I were on message. And we just appreciate your work getting us in front of those people. Again, I was surprised at just, you know, particularly with, you know, Durbin's office as well as State Rep. Chapin Rose. They just never had a conversation with us before,
right,
at least at that level. You know, and it was amazing how supportive they were after, you know, we can tell our story and not let somebody else tell it.
Right.
You know, how different things came out. You know,
absolutely.
So that's me, long way of saying I appreciate the work. So you've always been so responsive in getting us in front of these people. It's amazing. So thank you very much. That's helped this university a whole lot.
I thank the chairman, I thank the board, and I thank the team that you have in place here, and we're moving forward.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good luck at the lunch.
We're doing lunch soon.
Yeah.
Right. Thanks.
Thank you, counsel.
Hey, thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, trustees. For the record, Ken Cloud, Chief Internal Auditor. I'm going to go over my internal audit report for the last 3 months. If you could turn to page 2, please. Internal audit over the last 3 months have issued 3 internal audit reports for state statutory mandate audits in regards to Travel Control Board, Governmental Ethics Act and College Immunization Act. We are also issued draft reports for three audits right now, the DOE special project that was performed, and a couple of statutory mandate audits. We expect to issue those in the next week or two. We are currently engaged in multiple audits. We also just took on three more projects in regards to IT. If you recall, the FISA Act requires internal audit to review new major IT systems that are coming into place, and three of those, after review of the schematics and so forth for that, we deemed that the ad astra CSU by settlement and web time entry platforms needed to have our involvement in, so we have taken on those three projects as well. I think the go-live dates for all three of those are by July 1. We're also almost complete with the accounts payable operational audit. We're almost done with the Banner 8 upgrade. We're just finalizing some security testing on that. Hope to have that done within the month. We've also got some statutory mandate audits in regards to data security, senior citizens courses, and then the revenue bond law, a couple of others. We've also finalized the contract with the internal audit software organization, Thomson Reuters. We are now working through the implementation stages of that. We're going to be doing that in multiple phases. We just had our third implementation meeting yesterday. We're going to start putting the internal audit structure in first, and then we're going to be moving right into the compliance piece, and then we're going to go into an IT organization from there. So we expect to have the internal audit piece up and running by July 1, and then we'll be working on the compliance piece after that. We are also working still on our website content, which we're making progress on. So we still have a little bit more to go. Last meeting, I was asked to provide you on page 4, 5, and 6, the risk ratings for the particular areas that we have been looking at in 2012. So if you take a look at that on page 4, the third column is the risk rating. So for each audit that we performed, I've included for you our assessment of that particular area from an inherent standpoint. In regards to risk, right now we are in the process of finalizing the IT risk assessment, which was done in conjunction with C. Cole Dillon. We're almost complete with that, and that will be used to drive the internal audit plan, as well as IT will be able to use that for their assessment and where they're going to strategize in regards to their initiatives. Just this past week, I have also issued the memorandum to start the process for the overall CSU risk assessment that will be done by mid-June for preparatory purposes in regards to the internal audit plan for the next year, which must be done by June 30th per the FISA Act. So that basically concludes my report. If you have any questions.
This is great work.
Okay, thank you.
This is real helpful when I see these reports.
Thank you.
Great. And there's going to be some schematic. There'll be some changes in that when the new system comes up. There'll be additional reporting that I can provide you in regards to hours and just a liturgy of stuff. But we can work on that as we go through, and I'll figure out with you what you actually want.
So when you look at the I love the way you mapped this out, by the way. This is perfect. Do you prioritize these at all, or do you kind of just work on them all across the board?
In prioritized in the internal audit plan for sure, based on the risk assessment that we do. That's why I'm in the process of doing the IT one, as well as the overall CSU. And when I finish that, I'll know where some of the higher risks lie and what we should target. Now, obviously, I take into consideration past audits, problems that we may have found that we weren't able to get to, that we may have to get to now. There's a number of factors that I use to develop the internal audit plan, as well as I try to leave a little bit of space open for special projects that may come up, like the DOE project that came up this year and some of these IT projects that just came up.
So yeah, this is great. Hey, is it complicated for you to update this for each meeting?
No.
Just this piece here, you can do that?
I can do that for every meeting. You're talking about the table on page 4.
Right,
yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I will do that.
It looks good, thank you.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Great, thank you.
Good morning, President and
board members, I'm here on behalf of the Office of Compliance. I know that you have my board report, so just a brief update. I've met Chief of Staff Napoleon Moses, and I met with all various members of staff. We went through the corrective action plans, the state mandates, and their internal policies to make sure everyone was in compliance. I've also reached out to compliance personnel, as well as audit people, who I think would be very helpful for a smaller committee that I'm putting together. We're meeting next week to discuss their individual compliance initiatives, and in particular, the things that they have in place to kind of keep their own departments apprised of the upcoming state and federal regulations. I think is very important. And lastly, I'm very looking forward to actually going to a seminar next month, a 4-day seminar in Texas, which is one of the only seminar that I've found that is compliance for higher education. It's directly on point. It will be an opportunity for me to meet with other compliance professionals in higher education institutions, exchange strategies, and obviously increase my knowledge base, and I'm very pleased about going to that.
Just one question, Ms. Davis. I think one of the things that we had talked about was putting together a list of university personnel who had compliance responsibilities.
Well, I didn't go into enough depth. That was my point, too. I did that.
Okay.
I've identified a compliance person who is in each department who I feel actually very comfortable with, as well as some of them have some audit experience. There's about five persons, and those persons, I have already reached out to them, and we've actually scheduled a meeting for next week. So that is the list. If you want me to provide you with the list of persons, I can do that.
Okay, thank you. So I just want to know where they are.
Okay, that's fine.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I thought he had a question.
No question.
Okay.
So. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Again. Hello again.
Good
Sonia Clayton-Patterson, Interim Director of Athletics and Associate General Counsel. I have submitted my board report, and I have just three matters that I wanted to bring to your attention. The first is with respect to compliance. We have had two compliance matters. One is the Academic Performance Program data review, and the second is our movement away from restricted status with NCAA. The NCAA notified us in March that we would be completing this review process, which involved a look back over the last 4 years of our eligibility certification and other eligibility data that we maintain for student athletes with respect to their academic progress and graduation rates. We participated with several units within enrollment management in order to submit all that data in a timely manner, and it's currently under review by the NCAA staff. We expect to hear back from them in early summer with respect to that process, but we did identify during our review some deficiencies that occurred during previous transitions within athletics. One thing that's different about an audit from the NCAA is they allow you to correct those deficiencies immediately. So that it's part of the self-governing kind of process that the NCAA engages in. So we did identify some deficiencies, went back and recertified that data to make sure that it was accurate. The deficiencies primarily being a lack of full documentation to support the university's decisions. So we went back and recertified everybody to make sure that the data was correct, and we found that it was, and we're moving forward with that. The second compliance issue is that over the past seven years, we've had some difficulty with meeting minimum sports sponsorship requirements, which means the minimum number of athletes competing in the minimum number of games or contests for each sport, primarily track and field being the area of focus. I'm happy to report that we have met all sports sponsorship requirements for 2011-12 and will be moving out of restricted status with the NCAA.
Can you just go a little bit deeper on that on track and field? So where do we not meet that minimum?
In previous years, we had not met the minimum number of participants in women's track and field primarily. We've had some difficulty with men's as well, but the women's team is where we have been falling short. We instituted a strategic plan around track and field over this past academic year to build up the number of scholarships, to increase the number of contests, and so we've been able to manage that by you know, very closely monitoring it and making sure that we meet every contest with the minimum number of student athletes.
Did you feel that that was a recruiting issue? Just in terms of getting, you know, the minimum number of bodies to occupy each event. I mean, a lot of events are track and field.
Absolutely. Right. It's a recruiting issue, a funding issue, and a facilities issue. All three of those combined. And we're working to address that on all three levels.
When you say facilities, what do you mean by that?
We have a track and field on campus. We're one of the we are the only Division I institution in the city that has that facility, that has that opportunity. However, it is not up to par for hosting NCAA sanctioned meets. We did this year, for the first time in years, host a dual meet with University of Illinois Chicago because they were willing to do it. They were willing to show up and run on our track and use our fields. And it basically was, it's more like a glorified practice or a scrimmage, but it allows us to get in an extra contest. If we improve the facilities by refurbishing the track, we would be able to host more regular contests on campus, bring other institutions to us, which also helps us fiscally with respect to travel, so that we can more easily meet our contest requirements. And so that is something that moving into the future is going to have to be addressed.
The issue with the track, I just want to, how expensive is it?
To simply refurbish the surface is about $300,000 to $400,000, which would provide something akin to a Band-Aid. It would work for us for 4 or 5 years before it breaks down. But to really address the issue, the track needs to be completely pulled up and redone because of drainage issues. If we did that, which would be at a cost somewhere around 1.2 to 1.5 million, that would be something that could last 20 years.
Where is the track?
The track is located by Jones Convocation Center.
Okay.
It's just south of the center, kind of up on a hill, and next to the baseball field, which is slated to be, reinstalled this summer.
Okay.
All right. You find that to be a deterrent when you do bring, when you are recruiting, the home track? I know that's been an issue for the baseball team.
Yes.
You found it to be the same for the track?
It's not as much of a deterrent, only because the other Division I institutions in the city don't have a track. They don't even have a practice field to practice track to run on, and so it's not necessarily a deterrent. But I think it does certainly deplete the morale of even our current track team. So it would be a huge boost to both athletics and particularly the track and field program, which is so important to us because running sports account for 6 out of our 14 sports that we sponsor.
And that number you gave, that top line number 1.2, would that be just for the track itself, or is that also the pole vault pit, the high jump pit? Does that include all those surfaces?
No, that would be to reach for the track, for the track itself. We do have some other, as you mentioned, jumping pits, that sort of thing that we need to improve as well. But we have the capacity to do that utilizing our staff on campus, because those are really more maintenance issues.
Gotcha. And then just one other question. Remind me, I know at the secondary level, you have a maximum of 4 events that you can compete in. Is that the same at the collegiate level?
It is not.
Okay.
It is typically unlimited.
Okay. Yeah.
For track and field.
And we just had athletes just kind of filling in.
We primarily used to fill the gap. We used multi-sport athletes, which means we had at our athletic awards banquet, we had students who may have lettered in 3 sports because For instance, a female golf student athlete ran cross country full season and then came out and helped during indoor and outdoor track and field as well. And many of them do it willingly and want to do everything they can to support the program. However, it does become an issue with student athlete welfare and academic progress, because to compete year round is far more difficult on these students than focusing in their primary sport. So what we've done to address this is the new track and field staff and cross country staff have been allocated additional scholarship dollars to be able to recruit a full squad for 2012-13. The second item that I wanted to address is the AD search. Just to give you a quick update, we have had all finalists on campus for that search, and the president will be meeting with the leading candidate on Monday to extend an offer. So we expect to have an announcement very soon with respect to that.
I had an opportunity to glance at the three finalists, and they were all extremely qualified, and I know you worked tirelessly on that. So,
we had a wonderful broad-based committee that diligently worked through that, and so they deserve a tremendous amount of recognition for vetting all of the candidates.
Yeah, they were top-notch. So, I was excited to know that level of an AD or associate AD in some cases would want to come here.
Yes.
So, I imagine that's the work that those people have presented to those folks. So. Nice job on that.
Thank you.
That's important.
You know, in terms of prioritizing or whoever we bring on board, prioritizing the role of the new AD, our facilities in terms of our athletics ought to be a major priority. So we should be developing a plan and a budget for improving that, because if we're going to expand our recruiting efforts, we want to have the stuff at home that would attract people.
Absolutely, and one of the biggest areas of focus for all of the candidates has been outside development, which allows us then to raise the money to do those things as well.
Mr. Meeks can find the money.
Yeah. I'm going to hold him to that. The final thing I just wanted to bring to your attention was some recognition. Our tennis coach, Jack Barton, was named Coach of the Year for the Great West Conference, which was excellent. Congratulations to him. And then we also just last week had a student athlete recognized by the Great West Conference, Masvita Mizvahi, who is a graduating senior in the sport of volleyball, received the Great West Conference Sportsmanship Award.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Good afternoon, trustees.
Good morning, Ms. Harris.
Good morning. For the record, this is Yvonne Harris, AVP of Sponsored Programs. I do have a report for you, but I will be respectful of the board's time. I'll focus on just one part of that report, and I will leave another part of that report to report out on our next board meeting in June.
You've submitted a written report, right? It's all in there, so we've got the information.
Right. And then after that, I do have two action items for you. I wanted to focus on basically the corrective action plan. The slide. Can you expand it?